So, go by the clock in the room to start these meetings. I will check the satellite, 10 o'clock sharp. So we're going to start this meeting. And I want to start by welcoming everybody. I'm TJ Pulliam. I'm the chair of this committee. The chair of the SHIC is live and direct in Charlotte, Dr. Chris Ulrich. Chris, is that true? Are you hearing us?
I can hear you faintly.
Faintly? Well, I don't know if anyone here really wants me talking any louder, but if you have problems hearing us, please let me know.
Fair enough.
Okay, thank you. And we have a few other SHIC members on the line. So we actually have a quorum, so I'd like to get started. So you are here at the Long-Term Behavioral Health Committee. This is April 10th. I'm TJ Pulliam, currently serving as chair of this committee, but being monitored by the chair of the SHIC, so I hope this is not a sign of something. I'd like to welcome all the council members, staff, visitors to this meeting. It is a business meeting today, meaning it's open to the public. However, during the course of our deliberations, if there's any questions, we can call on folks in the audience, so be on your toes. We may be asking for some input out there. Okay, you may be distracted like I am that this is Masters weekend. It is the High Holy Days of Golf, and why I allowed this meeting to happen today, I'm not quite sure. I think it was a room availability thing, but I promise not to be checking to see who's winning. After our activities today, this committee will meet again May 1st, 10 a.m. in this room. As far as I know, no sporting conflicts that day. So, those members that are here and present, I will ask you to introduce yourself, and then we've got Dr. Ulrich and then three others that are supposedly dialed in. So let me start on my right. Ms. Michaud, would you please introduce yourself?
Denise Michaud, Caldwell County Health Director, representing Public Health.
Mr. Bergen.
Jim Bergen, Chairman Hardin County Commissioners, Local Government.
And we do have three people on the phone. Why don't you introduce yourselves, gentlemen, starting with Mr. Jacuz.
Good morning. This is Kurt Jacuz. I'm President of Health and Home Services in Hickory, and I represent home care and home health.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Brunick?
Good morning. This is Pete Brunick. I'm the President and CEO of Hospice and Cognitive Care Charlotte Region, and I represent the hospice industry on the SHIC.
Thank you. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve DiBiase. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Ortho Wilmington, and I'm an at-large member.
Okay, thank you. And again, I'm TJ Pulliam, currently acting as the chair, and hopefully will be after this meeting. I'm a stomach doctor from Southern Pines. I'm an at-large member of the SHIC. So I'd like staff now to introduce themselves. Why don't we start on my left?
Amy Craddock, planner.
Elizabeth Brown, planner.
Paige Bennett, planner.
And at the table, Drexel.
Drexel Pratt with the division office.
Shelley Caraway, chief of the healthcare funding certificate of need section.
Mark Representative, certificate of need.
And Lisa Pittman, certificate of need.
Derek Hunter from the attorney general's office.
Jill Bryant, attorney general's office.
Thank you. Tom?
Tom Dixon, database manager.
Great. Anyone else? Drexel, Elizabeth?
Mike McCullough, certificate of need.
Okay. Anybody else? I'll take a moment for a point of personal privilege with the CON folks. So, having moved a year and a half ago to Southern Pines, lovely place. We get the Raleigh paper. So, in the Raleigh paper, just jumped out at me.
And legislature.
And William Shatner somehow is one of the best. Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. So welcome to each and every. And again, those of you in the audience, be aware we may ask you to weigh in on some things as well. So now going down the agenda here, we need to review Executive Order Number 46, which reauthorized the State Health Coordinating Council. That was dated March 4th of 2014. We do have certain procedures to observe to protect the process and we'll go through that now. I am reminding all members of the SHIC that it is your duty to always act in the best interests of the public without your own professional, institutional, or financial interests. The next part is what I would call the no home cooking clause. No member of the SHIC may confer with any DHHS employee regarding any proposed provision of the SMFP or proposed or pending certificate of need application, which the member has a direct, conflicting professional, institutional, or financial interest, except in any public meeting. Ethical standards for the SHIC further require that members disclose any professional or institutional interest that he or she may have, and the chair, working with the Attorney General's office, will make that decision. All members have completed disclosure sheets, which are available for your review. If you need to see those, please ask the staff. I'm going to pause for a moment to allow all members to review the matters on today's agenda. And Mr. Brunick, as chair, I'm asking you to recuse from the petition that we'll be voting on. However, as you're reviewing that, one important point, and I will emphasize this, though a member has recused, he or she may deliberate on the matter, i.e. speak to the points that are raised, if they feel they must and wish to. The minutes of today's meeting will reflect all disclosures and recusals. So, I turn to all members present or on telephone. Anyone else need to recuse besides Mr. Brunick on the hospice petition or other petitions or matters? Hearing none, I think we're good to go. Now, the other thing that I will say to the Attorney General's office and all others, if something does come up and it doesn't feel right or smell right to you, then you probably should recuse. Let me turn, we have a couple folks from the Attorney General's office. Are we good? You're going to keep me straight?
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. Okay. So next agenda item, I'm going to entertain a motion to approve the September 16th meeting minutes. Moved by Ms. Michaud.
Second.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Bergen. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes,
Bergen.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. We have a motion and second to approve the minutes. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? That carries unanimously. Okay, thank you very much. We are switching up the chapter order a bit so that Mr. Brunick can listen in and participate. So we're actually going to go now to chapter 13, our hospice services chapter, and I will turn to Elizabeth Brown to help us with a review of methodology, and then we'll discuss the petition.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For chapter 13, there are no policies to review for this chapter, hospice services. The data sources used with the hospice standard methodology for the proposed 2016 state medical facilities plan will be a total report at hospice patient deaths, admissions, days of care, and licensed offices by county data are compiled from the hospice agency 2015 annual data supplements to licensure applications. Deaths and death rates are obtained from the State Center for Health Statistics. Estimates and projections of populations are obtained from the North Carolina Office of State Budget and Management. Estimated active duty military population numbers will be excluded from the 18 to 64 age group for any county with more than 500 active duty military personnel. We will obtain those estimates from the American Community Survey 2013 five-year estimate. The standard methodology, hospice home care, has steps 1 through 14, and those can be found on pages 317 to 318 in the 2015 State Medical Facilities Plan. A brief summary of the standard methodology used to project the need for new hospice home care offices. The hospice home care standard methodology uses county mortality rates for the most recent 5 years as the basis for hospice patient need projection. A two-year trailing average growth rate in statewide number of deaths served is used over the previous 3 years. This projects changes in the capacity of existing agencies to serve deaths from each county by the target year. Median projected hospice deaths is done by applying the projected statewide median percent of deaths served by hospice to projected deaths in each county. An additional home care office is needed if the county's deficit is 90% or more and the number of licensed offices in the county per 100,000 is 3 or less. Hospice inpatient beds methodology steps 1 through 12 can be found on pages 319 to 320. To briefly summarize the standard methodology used to project need for new hospices inpatient beds, the methodology uses total projected admissions, statewide median average length of stay per admission, and each county's average length of stay per admission, and each county's average length of stay per admission for projecting estimated inpatient days for each county. Similar to the hospice home care methodology, previous year's data is used, so a two-year trailing average growth rate in the statewide hospice admissions is done over the previous 3 years. 6% of the total estimated days of care in each county is used as a basis for estimating days of care in licensed inpatient hospice facility beds. Hospice residential beds, the methodology, there is no need methodology for hospice residential beds. This is noted on page 316 in the 2015 SMFP. Mr. Chairman, this concludes a review of the standard methodologies used in Chapter 13, Hospice Services. We received one petition.
Hang on 1 second. Yes. Draw a deep breath a minute. Let me ask the members present and on the phone. Any questions regarding the methodology? Anybody with a question out there? We do want to go into the petition. What I would prefer to do rather than taking action on the methodology separate, I think we really need to put it all in context, especially in light of the petition, to see if other issues arise that we need to talk about. So, hearing none, we're good to hear about the petition. Everybody okay with that? Anyone not okay with that? Okay, Elizabeth, proceed.
We received one petition, a request to modify the hospice inpatient bed need methodology. The request was received from the Association of Home and Hospice Care of North Carolina and the Carolina Center for Hospice and End-of-Life Care. They petitioned to modify the hospice inpatient bed need methodology by changing step 7 of the hospice inpatient bed need methodology to reflect a two-year trailing average statewide inpatient utilization rate rather than the static 6% in the current methodology. Background information on the petition. A hospice methodology task force met several times in 2009 to review, discuss, and evaluate the effectiveness of the hospice inpatient bed needs methodology. The task force carefully reviewed different components of the methodology individually and together to examine the outcome of each. The task force presented the Long-Term and Behavioral Health Committee with recommendations to modify the hospice inpatient bed methodology. The committee accepted the recommendations, which were subsequently approved by the SHIC for inclusion in the 2010 State Medical Facilities Plan. The current hospice inpatient methodology uses projected hospice days of care, calculated by multiplying projected hospice admissions by the lower of the statewide median average length of stay for each county. This selection reduces the inclusion of days of care that may not be appropriate for an inpatient facility. The projected hospice admissions are determined by the application of the two-year trailing average growth rate in the number of admissions served to current admissions. Inpatient days as a percentage of total days of care are determined to be approximately 6% based on statewide inpatient days as a percentage of total days of care. Hospice inpatient methodology projects inpatient beds based on 85% occupancy and adjusts projected beds for occupancy rates of existing facilities that are not at 85% occupancy. Data in Table 1 in the agency report shows inpatient days of care from inpatient facilities only and does not include the comprehensive measure that may more accurately reflect all inpatient utilization. The agency's analysis. The petition suggests modifying Step 7 of the hospice inpatient bed methodology to reflect a two-year trailing average statewide inpatient utilization rate using statewide inpatient days of care. Step 7 of the current standard hospice inpatient bed methodology uses a static 6% to project hospice days of care and inpatient days of care for each county. The petition identifies national and statewide trends in hospital utilization as reasons for modifying the hospice inpatient bed need methodology. Data provided in the petition states inpatient days of care represent approximately 3.98% of the total hospice days in North Carolina. While the agency was not able to match the figures presented in the petition, we were able to verify a statewide hospice inpatient utilization rate lower than 6% consistently for the last 5 years. Table 2 in the agency report shows statewide inpatient percent of total days range from 3.44% in the 2011 SMFP to 4.16% in 2015 SMFP. Furthermore, the petition states a two-year trailing average more accurately reflects industry trends as they happen. At the time, 6% was the most appropriate figure to use, but it no longer is supported by the data. By using the most current, up-to-date data, the agency calculated a two-year trailing average rate of 4.3%, as seen in Table 3 in the agency report. The agency recommends the petition be approved given the information and comments submitted by the March 20th, 2015 deadline for comments on petitions and comments. However, we do recommend that the SHC comes back and looks at the methodology within the next 2 years. And also that we work with providers to submit data that accurately reflects the information that is delivered for inpatient facilities statewide.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. As she went through that, I need to speak to the Attorney General's office. My wife is a hospice nurse. I don't think this probably affects her life or my life, but I'm not planning on voting, but I will recuse if it does come down to a vote. So I'm going to recuse on this petition, if you would, please. So you've heard the agency recommendation, and that would be to approve the petition. So I'm seeking a motion from Ms. Michaud, thank you, to go with the agency report approving the petition. Need a second.
Second.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Bergen, we have appropriate motion and appropriate second. Now, any discussion? And I actually am encouraging some discussion here on a lot of levels. When this was brought to our group, it was pretty clear to me that a lot of right-thinking citizens had gotten together at the direction of prior SHC chair, Mr. Jerry Parks. One thing, as you know, that we've been trying to do is try and limit the burden on staff for things like work groups. If we can get the right people to collectively and collaboratively put their best minds and best hearts together and kind of tee things up, that's a really good thing. It serves everybody well. The citizens of North Carolina, it serves the staff, it serves the process. I see no problem with it. I think it's a really good thing. And I'm glad that Jerry Parks affirmed that and showed the leadership. So with all that being said, there was a gap for a couple of years where I was not chairing this committee. Others were chairing it quite ably. so I wasn't involved in those discussions, but it seemed to me when the petition came that it was done in an appropriate, timely fashion. And Dr. Ulrich, you can help me on this, but I believe as they spoke to you, you said the process is that an outside discussion group, probably shouldn't call it a work group, but an outside discussion group, once they come to a consensus recommendation, that it needs to come to the SHC as a petition. So the petition was appropriately placed in the appropriate time. Is that correct?
TJ, the private, you know, stakeholder discussion is constructive, but it is not the appropriate form to determine policy. So this needs to go through the petition process with the public comment review by the council before and after public comment, and then final action taken so that everyone in the state has the opportunity to comment.
Well, let's talk about process again then. So we have a motion, a second, to approve the petition, but if it stands approved by us, then it has to be fully approved by the full SHC June 3rd and then goes through the summer cycle. Is that the process as you're defining it? Because I don't want to go afoul here.
That's normal order and normal process, and that's what I believe should happen.
So the committee can take action on this today?
It needs to. In order to go out for public comment, it needs to be included in the proposed plan that goes out for comment. Now, you always have the power, if based on comments that we receive over the summer, to decide to withdraw the approval at your final meeting.
Okay. I didn't know I had that kind of power. I have no power in my household. So, well, thank you for that. Since this is an important thing, and it's a little different than a work group and that sort of stuff, I would ask if petitioners present if they would like to speak to this. Is that okay, Dr. Ulrich?
I think we might, Mr. Chair.
You're chairing the meeting. That's your prerogative.
Okay. So if petitioners present, especially the collaborative petitioners,
I'm Tim Rogers, and this is Carol Meyer. We're with the two associations that presented the petition. And just for historical reference, there have been two petitions in the past to change the methodology, and they were both not recommended by the agency, nor were they approved by the SHC. So the industry was trying to come together, to some consensus. We brought together a diverse group of large and small hospices who have inpatient units and some that don't have inpatient units that might want to have inpatient units in the future. And the good thing was, in that diverse group that represented hospices from Elizabeth City all the way to Hendersonville and every point in between, we brought together both sides that had found themselves on both sides of the previous two petitions. And Carol, with Carol and Annette's support, the two associations worked hand in hand together and brought the petitioners to us to listen to both of the petitioners, to both sides. And the moral of the story is we reached a 100% unanimous consensus among all parties after about a 9 or 10 month process. And we are very appreciative of Drexel Pratt and his staff and Elizabeth for their working with us and asking questions and gathering more information. The data that we used at the time was the data we had available to us. And I'll just make an editorial comment and I'll turn it over to my colleague, Carol Meyer. Hospices are under as much scrutiny by the federal government as any healthcare player in the continuum. My personal feeling is not rightfully so, but it is what it is. And we have to, you ask us to look at creativity, data accuracy, and national trends that affect our industry, and that's exactly what we have done. I want to finally say, 14 years ago, North Carolina again was woefully below the national average in the number of inpatient beds. We now rank in the top five in the country after 14 years, and that is credit to this body right here and credit to the SHC for making more hospice inpatient beds available to citizens who have to place their loved ones in an inpatient facility. We have sort of reached a capacity level for the current time frame, and that's another reason why we issued the petition and came to the consensus that we did.
Right, and I'd like to echo everything that Tim just shared, and I think go into a little bit of depth about the national trends with inpatient utilization. Because of the additional scrutiny, as a result of a few bad actors in the industry, inpatient utilization is being heavily looked at by the feds, and so we're seeing, a reduced utilization having built based on the best available information at the time, CONs were awarded to different hospices throughout the state. So this is not a knee-jerk response to anything. It's really been looking at what's not only happening here in North Carolina, but nationally where inpatient utilization is dropping. The other, I think, important thing that is worth reemphasizing is that this really was a consensus process. We didn't start at the point where we wound up. And there was many, many discussions. There were, we looked at urban and rural phenomena. We looked at, and if then, that would account for urban and rural phenomena. And at the end of the day, we I think the group, through this consensus and an open process, wanted to keep it as simple as possible, and we honed in on one step of the methodology, and we really appreciate the opportunity to clarify anything today, and appreciate your looking at this in the spirit that it was intended.
Well, thank you. I have one question, and this is always my question. Does this make for better planning?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I think moving to a non-static number and recent utilization practices will give you a much clearer picture of how hospice inpatient beds are being used across the state. And if you stay at that 6% number, which overstates, will result in an overstated need, you're going to potentially continue to overbuild. And that's not, commend to you what anybody wants in the state.
And we already have another 100 beds in the pipeline, right?
Okay.
To come online. And we have pledged to Elizabeth and Drexel and Shelley and others that the two associations that represent 99% of every hospice in North Carolina, either dual members or singular members, will work with them to make sure hospices get the accurate data and any additional data. We do that automatically every year, and these hospices have said they're willing to step up to make sure this is subjectively a very, very, very accurate process. So.
And we would also embrace the staff recommendation to review the methodology.
Thank you. I think I appreciate you saying that, because
yeah.
I do want to make sure that everyone understands that this is all about optimal planning, optimal advice to the governor. This is the people's plan, and there's a process, and we have to respect that process. And I think, Dr. Ulrich, you've affirmed that we're doing that, and I appreciate that. We also have to affirm that we're doing this out of respect to the people involved, the people out in the audience, planning for my family, planning for the staff, and they do a wonderful job. So the one thing in their recommendation that stands out to me, I would use the word proviso, that the proviso is that within a couple of years, we're looking at this again.
Please.
The planning horizon in healthcare in this state and in this country is really only about 2 to 3 years because of everything changing. So we've got to get back together. This is a continuous process. So any questions from anybody either in the room or on the phone, questions for the petitioners?
Mr. Chairman, this is Pete Brunick. I just have maybe a couple comments, if I may.
Please.
Again, in reading the agency recommendation, first of all, I want to just, again, thank the work group, thank the associations and the agency for their work on this petition or this process of reviewing the methodology. I think it was a solid process. I think it yielded the result that was the best effort we could produce at this time. I'm perhaps I'm just asking questions here. I'm always one for clarity, and and when I see a recommendation that's asking for future action, I want to make sure that we comply with what that action is. And in the recommendation itself, and again, I may be nitpicking here, but it says that in 2 years, we will review the methodology with input from all affected parties. And reading this, I would ask the question, how are we defining all affected parties?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. I sure don't have an answer. I'm going to punt that one to staff. Who wants to take that one?
Let me take a stab at that. And thank you, Pete, for your comment. Just so everyone's familiar with and the transparency of this process, what happened is when we get the petition, on any petition, when we have questions as a staff, we usually call the groups to try to come together, the petitioners, to come together either by phone or in person to discuss those questions. In this particular one, and Mr. Brunick was actually in the meeting, we actually asked for a face-to-face meeting because with the new methodology that's being proposed and that we support, it did, however, show by county level that there was a huge surplus of inpatient beds available in the plant, and that it was fairly significant surplus. Not saying that's a bad thing, it's just the way it turned out. We did want clarity in that before we moved forward with a recommendation. So in our discussion, what we agreed with, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, I think what everybody agreed with the day we met was that these two things that be considered in the recommendation. First one is that with the landscape and healthcare changing so rapidly, we probably need to look at this, and it may not be a bad idea for all methodology, but for this particular one, since we have such a huge surplus, that we may want to look at this again in 2 years. The other thing is it's pretty dramatic change from using the static data line going to the GIP line, because that data line right now is not very accurate. Now we're going to work together to try to get that accurate. But given today, if we were to say on today, that's not very accurate data in that particular column. And it's because of we won't go into a lot of detail unless you want to, Mr. Chairman, but it's because of the one hospice company having several, the parent-child relationship. So it's a discrepancy there that we have to work out, and we plan to do that. And so that was a part of the recommendation, is that we work together to get that discrepancy worked out, to make sure that we're coming back with accurate information. So those two things is what we all agreed to, and that's why it's in the recommendation that way.
Thank you.
It's not a mandate. The SHIC can certainly do whatever it chooses to do, but you may want to look at it again next year. It depends. But we currently have over 100 beds, as Tim said, available with already CONs issued, and they're not, you know, whether they're going to be implemented in 1 to 2 years, who knows, but.
Okay. Well, let me say this. Thank you for those comments. I'm going to hold the industry. The data that you send in better be clean, because if it's not good data, I mean, we can't do good planning. So I'm going to count on you for that. I think relooking at it, I think everything that's been said, I don't disagree with. I think we've got a robust process. I'll ask if anybody else has quick questions, because I'm looking at the agenda and we've got a lot more to cover. So I don't want to cut the discussion off. Any other questions by anyone present or over the phone? Dr. Ulrich, any questions?
I'm fine.
Great. Okay, I'm going to call the question, call the vote. So all in favor of approving the methodology and approving the petition, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, that's a unanimous. Thank you very much. Okay, so back to the agenda.
Thank you. I'll jump off now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brunick. So we're moving on to Chapter 10, Nursing Care Facilities. We're going to hear about the policies and need methodology. Paige Bennett, please. I did. I put them together, petition and the methodology, because we did them together, I think.
Okay.
Didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
you did.
I think I did. Okay. So, now, Paige.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please.
There are 8 policies in Chapter 4 related to nursing homes, and they can be found on pages 25 to 30 of the 2015 SMFP. The first one, NH1, is the provision of hospital-based nursing care. This policy allows a hospital to convert up to 10 beds from its licensed acute care bed capacity for use as a hospital-based nursing care beds without regard to need determinations in Chapter 10 of the SMFP. This conversion is contingent on two criteria. The first is that the hospital is in a rural area, and that it is a small facility, which is less than 150 beds. NH2 is the plan exemption for continuing care retirement communities. This policy allows qualified continuing care retirement communities to include from the outset or add or convert capacity for nursing care beds without regard to the nursing care bed needs shown in Chapter 10. The purpose of this exemption is to meet the needs of the residents who have signed continuing care contracts. Nursing home policy 3, determination of need for additional nursing care beds in single provider counties. This policy allows a nursing care facility with fewer than 80 nursing care beds to apply for a CON for additional beds in order to bring the minimum number of beds in the county to no more than 80 without regard to need determinations in Chapter 10 when the facility is the only nursing care facility in the county. NH4, relocation of certain nursing facility beds. This policy sets criteria for relocating existing licensed nursing facility beds to another county when the facility is supported by and directly affiliated with a particular religion. NH5, transfer of nursing facility beds from state psychiatric hospital nursing facilities to community facilities. This policy sets criteria for the transfer of state psychiatric hospital nursing beds to community nursing facilities, provided that services are available in the communities receiving the beds. NH6 is the relocation of nursing facility beds, and I'd like to call the members' attention to a, I think you have a handout, and we actually have a screen, Tom, if you could, okay. So we have some proposed wording changes to policy NH6, and actually, we have very similar wording policy changes for nursing home policy 6, long-term care policy 2, and end-stage renal disease policy 2. And we're going to go over each one of those and take a separate vote so we make sure that procedurally we get all that approved. So it's slightly different than what we would normally do in this instance, but because the wording was almost identical in each policy, we thought it would be easier to do it this way. So as you see on the screen, at the first paragraph, that we are proposing to remove the language currently served by the facility, and then we shall want to add a number one provision, which is demonstrate that the facility losing beds or moving to a continuous county is currently serving residents of that contiguous county, and we also would like to add the wording in the second bullet to say, demonstrate that the proposal shall not result in a deficit or increase an existing deficit. And conversely, in the third bullet, to demonstrate that the proposal shall not result in a surplus or increase an existing surplus. And again, we'll be voting on that one a little bit separately. So I'm just going to go on with the rest of the nursing home policies and do the nursing home methodology. So NH7 is transfer of continuing care retirement community beds. This policy sets criteria for the transfer of CCRC beds without regard to nursing bed need determinations in Chapter 10. NH8 is the innovation in nursing facility design. This policy mandates that new nursing facilities applying for a CON, along with those facilities requesting expansion or renovation, pursue approaches, practices, and designs that address quality of care and quality of need of the residents. And that concludes the policies for the nursing home. And if it's okay with the chair, I can go straight into the methodology.
Yeah, let me just pause for a second. So those of you that aren't here, did y'all watch a show growing up called Sing Along with Mitch? Remember when they follow the bouncing ball? So if you're not here, you don't have the screen in front, so you're not probably seeing the changes in the words. But the words changes look good, and it's probably better planning. So be reassured, those of us laying eyes on it seems okay. We'll ask for questions in a minute. Let's go ahead on then to the methodology.
Okay, thank you. Nursing care facilities methodology for Chapter 10. The description of the methodology can be found on page 189 through 191 of the 2015 State Medical Facilities Plan. The proximate determinant of nursing home utilization is the age of the population. The steps in the methodology. Currently, each of North Carolina's 100 counties is considered a separate service area when determining nursing home utilization. Need is determined by calculating the statewide five-year average use rate per 1,000 population for each of four age groups based on data from annual license renewal applications. These rates, or beds per 1,000 population, are applied to the projected population going forward 3 years for each service area. The amount of need per service area is then established based on the size of the service area's projected surplus or deficit when the projected utilization is compared to the inventory of existing and approved beds. Page 191 details how deficit side is used to determine the county's bed need. And with that, Mr. Chairman, this concludes our review of Chapter 10.
Excellent. Paige, thank you so much. Well done. I know we'll be calling on you in a minute. So, you've heard from Paige. What we need to do then is entertain a motion to accept the policies, need methodologies outlined by Paige, including the wording changes which make for better planning. So, seeking that motion.
So moved.
Mr. Bergen, thank you. Ms. Michaud, seconds. Thank you. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that carries unanimously as well. Thank you, Paige. So now we're going to move to Chapter 11, Adult Care Homes, and that's Paige again.
Okay. Let's see. There are two policies in Chapter 4 related to adult care homes. These policies are found on pages 31 and 32 of the SMFP. The first is LTC-1. The plan exemption for continuing care retirement communities adult care home beds. This policy sets criteria for adding or converting adult care beds in CCRCs without regard for need determinations in Chapter 11. This policy also provides an exclusion from the SMFP inventory for 50% of the adult care beds in the CCRCs developed under this policy. LTC-2 is relocation of adult care home beds. And this again is one of the other policies that we are suggesting that there be some wording changes. Thank you, Tom. And you'll see on the screen or in your handout that these changes are almost exactly the same as the ones from NH6. We want to remove the wording currently served by the facility in the opening paragraph and remove the word counties. We want to add the first bullet, which says, demonstrate that the facility losing beds or moving to a contiguous county is currently serving residents of that contiguous county. And we would like to add the wording to bullet 2, that the proposal shall not increase an existing deficit. And in bullet 3, add the wording, demonstrate that the proposal shall not increase an existing surplus. And with that, that concludes the policies for adult care home facilities.
And I know that it's those word changes are for better planning. I take that as a given. Okay, continue, please.
Okay. With that, I'll do the methodology for Chapter 11, Adult Care Homes. Description of the methodology used can be found on pages 215 through 217 of the State Medical Facilities Plan. The proximate determinant of adult care home utilization is the age of the population. The steps in the methodology are that currently each of North Carolina's 100 counties is considered a separate service area when determining adult care home utilization. Need is determined by calculating the statewide five-year average use rate per 1,000 population for each of five age groups based on data from the annual license renewal applications. These rates or beds per 1,000 population are applied to the projected population going forward 3 years for each service area. The amount of need per service area is then established based on the size of the service area's projected surplus or deficit when the projected utilization is compared to the inventory of existing and approved beds. Page 217 details how deficit site is used to determine the county's bed need. And with that, that concludes review of Chapter 11.
Outstanding. Thank you, Paige. Okay, Mr. Jacuz, I'm seeking a motion to approve the policies and need methodologies for Chapter 11. Thank you for that motion. Mr. DiBiase, do you second that? Steve, are you there?
Hello.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
We've got Kurt. Okay, Kurt made the motion. Jacuz with the motion. Mr. DiBiase?
Yes.
You second that?
Yes.
Just want you to stay away. Okay, any discussion? Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, it carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Now, we're moving on to Chapter 12, Home Health Services, and I turn again to Elizabeth Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Policies applicable to the Home Health Services chapter can be found on page 32 in Chapter 4, Statement of Policies. Policy HH3, Need Determinations for Medicare Certified Home Health Agency in a County. This policy establishes a need for a new home health office when there is no existing office located in a county.
Excuse me. I'm sorry to interrupt, Elizabeth. This is Mr. Jacuz, but I'm having a very difficult time hearing.
I'm sorry.
Thanks, Kurt. We'll fix that if we can.
There we go. There we go. There we go.
I'm sure you can hear me. Elizabeth is moving the speaker closer. Thank you, Kurt.
All right. Thank you.
I appreciate you speaking up. Go ahead now. Elizabeth?
Sorry, I'll start over. Policy HH3, Need Determination for Medicare Certified Home Health Agency in a County, establishes a need for a new home health office when there is no existing office located in a county with a population of 20,000 people or more, or if a county population is less than 20,000 people and there is no home health office located in a North Carolina county within 20 miles. There is an exception to this policy. The exception is Granville County that has been served by Granville-Vance District Health Department and recognizes and is recognized by DHSR as a single geographic entity for the purposes of location of a home health agency office. The data sources used with the home health standard methodology for the proposed 2016 State Medical Facilities Plan will be patient origin data compiled from the Home Health Agency 2015 Annual Data Supplement to Licensure Application and county population projections by age group obtained from the North Carolina Office of State Budget and Management. Estimated active duty population numbers will be excluded from the 18 to 64 age group for any county with more than 500 active duty military personnel. We obtain those estimates from the American Community Survey for 2015 five-year estimate. The standard methodology includes 14 steps and can be found on pages 251 through 252 in the 2015 State Medical Facilities Plan. Instead of going through all 14 steps, I'm just going to do a quick review of the methodology. The standard methodology used to project the need for new home health offices. Through the use of four different age groups, the utilization patterns of young and old patients are assessed. The standard methodology looks at growth in the number of patients and at growth in existing agencies' ability to serve future patients. Historically, this is done by county. This is done county by county and averaged at the Council of Government or COG regions level annual rate of change. There were no petitions or comments received regarding this chapter, and this concludes our report on Chapter 12.
Excellent. Thank you, Elizabeth. Those on the line, we have an AV expert in our midst, Mr. Pratt, who realized that the microphone here at the head of the table wasn't even on. So he fixed that for us. He can add AV expert to his LinkedIn profile now.
He gets my vote. Thank you.
Cool. Okay, so that was Chapter 12. Was that both policies and methodology? Was that just policy? It was both?
It was both.
Okay, so I'm entertaining a motion to approve the Home Health Service Chapter 12, the policy and need methodology is outlined by Ms. Brown. Moved by Ms. Michaud, thank you. Second by Mr. Jacuz, thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, that carries unanimously. So, Chapter 14, End-Stage Renal Disease Dialysis Facilities. Again, turn to Elizabeth, please.
Thank you, Dr. Pulliam. There is one policy for the ESRD chapter. This policy can be found on page 32 in the 2015 SMFP Chapter 4 Statement of Policies. This is policy ESRD2, Relocation of Dialysis Stations. And here again, this policy, as there is a small revision to the language, as the two policies before Paige mentioned, the revision is very similar. In the first sentence, basically we are deleting the words currently served by facility. And in the second sentence, the first paragraph, we are deleting counties. And then we are adding a bullet that states, demonstrate that the facility losing dialysis stations or moving to a contiguous county is currently serving residents of that contiguous county. And the second bullet, we are adding language that states, or increase an existing deficit. The third bullet, we will add language that states, or increase an existing surplus. Any questions?
Sounds like better planning to me. Okay.
Okay. Continuing on, the data sources used with the ESRD chapter, data on the current number of dialysis facilities and stations is obtained from the Certificate of Need and from the acute care license and certification sections, and also data on the dialysis population by county and by facility is provided by end-stage renal disease providers operating certified dialysis facilities to the Division of Health Service Regulation, the healthcare planning section. The standard methodology can be found in the 2015 State Medical Facilities Plan on pages 363 through 366. Basically is a two-prong methodology. The need for new dialysis station is determined two times each calendar year. Determinations are made available in the North Carolina Semiannual Dialysis Report. The first prong of the methodology is a county need determination. This is based on all residents of North Carolina, regardless of where they are currently receiving services. Future patient counts are projected for 6 to 12 months into the future based on a 5-year trend line. Need is based on 80% utilization of existing stations at 3.2 patients per station. The threshold for need is a projected deficit of 10 stations. The second part of the need is a facility need determination. It is a permissive methodology which allows for an existing provider located in a county where the projected county need is zero to apply for additional stations if that facility is operating at or above 80% utilization and feels it needs additional capacity. Because patients can choose to cross county lines, this allows a facility in high demand to apply for expansion, even if the host county has sufficient stations based on local county residents. There were no petitions or comments received regarding this chapter, and that concludes our update on Chapter 14.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. I have to ask the question because it'll fall out of my brain if I don't. In terms of data, I know that's kind of the next meeting, and we were having an issue with data reporting. Has that all ironed out pretty good?
It's still self-reported data from...
Self-reported, but it's good data coming in.
As good as it gets.
As good as it gets. Well, that's all we can ask for. Okay, so you've heard the review by Elizabeth regarding the policy methodology, and we need committee action on that. So entertaining motion. Thank you, Mr. Bergen. Second, Mr. Jacuz.
Yes, yeah,
thank
second.
You. Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any
aye, aye.
Aye, aye. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to say aye, aye, sir. So, any opposed? Carries unanimously. Thanks. Now, let process question briefly. So, on my agenda, we've already taken care of that, right?
Yes.
Check. We're done
yes.
now. So, now, Amy Craddock is in the spotlight. Psychiatric Inpatient Service Chapter 15. Dr. Craddock, please.
Okay. There are two policies relevant to this chapter. They begin on page 33 in Chapter 4. The first policy is MH1, and it is actually applicable to Chapters 15, 16, and 17. It says that a certificate of need applicant shall document that the effective LME MCO has been contacted and invited to comment on proposed services described in the CON application. There is one policy that applies specifically to Chapter 15, that is PSY-1, transfer of beds from state psychiatric hospitals to community facilities. Beds may be relocated from state facilities through the CON process, provided services and programs shall be available in the community. Beds transferred from state facilities shall be closed within 90 days after the date that the community beds become operational. CON applicants must commit to serve the type of short-term patients normally placed in the state facility beds. To help ensure that this occurs, there must be a written memorandum of agreement between the LME MCO, the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, and the CON applicant. Those are the policies.
Okay, thank you.
The methodology for Chapter 15 begins, I believe, on page 369. The data sources for the Chapter 15 methodology are Truven Health Analytics and the license renewal applications from facilities that do not report to Truven. Bed need is projected 2 years into the future, and there is a separate process for adult bed need determinations and child adolescent bed need determinations. First, beginning with the bed needs for children and adolescents, the estimated days of care for 2017 is determined by taking the 2013 days of care for this age group, multiplying it by the projected 2017 child adolescent population, and then divided that number by the 2013 population. This projected 2017 days of care is adjusted downward by 20% to take into account the projected continued decrease in utilization by this age group. Then that adjusted number is divided by 365 and then by 75% to arrive at the child adolescent bed need in year 2017, assuming 75% occupancy. The number of existing child adolescent beds in the planning inventory is then subtracted from the bed need in order to arrive at the year 2017 unmet bed need for children and adolescents. And for adults, these steps are almost identical. The year 2017 days of care is determined by taking the 2013 days of care, multiplying it by the 2017 projected adult population, and dividing it by the 2013 population. Days of care is the projected days of care is then divided by 365 and then again by 75% to arrive at the bed need for year 2017, assuming 75% occupancy. And then finally, the number of existing adult beds in the planning inventory is then subtracted from the bed need in order to arrive at the year 2017 unmet bed need. We are proposing a slight revision to the language. I didn't know if you wanted me to go into that now.
Sure.
Or
no, that'd be perfect. Please do.
Okay. You have in your handouts a document that looks like this. It is a proposed clarification to the methodology in both chapters 15 and 16, but the clarification is identical. Under the current methodologies for chapters 15 and 16, a bed need determination from the prior year's plan. For example, in 2015, a bed need determination from the 2014 plan for which no certificates of need were issued will be included in the 2015 SMFP, even though it is not an additional need beyond the 2014 need. Rather, that 2014 need for which there were no CON applications is sort of folded into that 2015 need. And it makes it look to CON applicants, potential CON applicants, that there is a new additional need for 2015 when there is not. However, when a CON is issued after the 2015 plan is gone to the governor, the agency must issue a special memorandum explaining that the 2015 plan need has been reduced by the number of beds approved in the certificate of need. This occurs because there is not an explicit definition in this methodology of the planning inventory. In other chapters, there is an explicit definition of what the planning inventory means, and it must be inferred in this methodology. And the way the calculations are and the way the methodology reads, the planning inventory is the licensed beds adjusted for beds approved by a certificate of need but not yet licensed. It does not adjust, as other methodologies do, it does not adjust for beds in prior year need determinations for which no CONs have been issued. So we're proposing adding a statement to step four of the methodology that says the planning inventory is determined based on licensed beds adjusted for CON approved or license pending, CON approved and license pending beds, and beds available in prior plans that have not been CON approved. And there are no changes required to Table 15A as a result of this change, of this proposed change.
Very good. Good.
So,
is that it?
That's it.
So, let me just observe something before we seek the motion for Mr. Bergen. You know, one of the great things about the process is it's really working very, very well. And Dr. Craddock has impressed me by her thoughtful review of stuff. I mean, she's come into her job and she's aiming to do it right. And she's looking at all this stuff and she's making it better. So, thank you for that. I would spread that praise around the whole staff. They're doing an excellent job. I think that we're in a very good planning cycle, but I especially want to tell you, man, I appreciate the fact, because I've sat here for a lot of years and we've just kind of passed it along, but it's really been scrutinized and reviewed. So thank you for that. So, Mr. Bergen, I am seeking the motion to approve the policies, methodology, and proposed wording changes in Chapter 15. So moved by Mr. Bergen, a second by Ms. Michaud. Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, thank you. So I'll turn to Dr. Craddock again. Chapter 16, Substance Abuse and Chemical Dependency Chapter, please.
Yes. As with Chapter 15, the methodology in Chapter 16 uses data from Truven Analytics as well as license renewal applications for facilities that do not report to Truven and additional data collection instrument submitted to the substance abuse residential treatment centers that are covered under the plan. Again, this methodology has two steps, days of care are projected 2 years into the future, and the days of care are projected for the LME MCO level, and then for the bed need determinations for two regions of the state. The estimated year 2017 days of care for all age groups is determined by taking the year 2013 days of care, multiplying that by the projected year 2017 population, and then dividing by the year 2013 population. We divide this number again by 365 and then again by 85% to arrive at the total bed need in 2017, assuming 85% occupancy. That arrives at the information for total bed need. To determine the projected unmet bed need for children and adolescents and for adults, we start with the number of existing beds in the planning inventory, and it is subtracted from the total bed need to arrive at the 2017 unmet bed need. 9% of the total bed need is subtracted as the estimated year 2017 bed need for children and adolescents based on utilization patterns reflected in past data. That is, 9% of the days of stay were for children and adolescents. The child adolescent planning inventory is then subtracted from the child adolescent bed need to arrive at the year 2017 child adolescent unmet bed need. The adult bed need is calculated by subtracting the child adolescent surplus or deficit, the unmet bed need, which can be positive or negative numbers, from the total bed surplus or deficit. And just as with Chapter 15, we have a proposed wording alteration or clarification for Chapter 16 that is identical to that in Chapter 15, where in Step 1 of Part 2, which is determining the projected unmet bed need for children and adolescents and for adults, we have the sentence in blue. The planning inventory is determined based on licensed beds, adjusted for CON approved licensed pending beds and beds available in prior plans that have not been CON approved. This requested clarification, however, does require a change to Table 16A. And Tom will bring that up, and you have those handouts in front of you with two tables. That's the one that got sent to you. There we go. That's the one that was sent to you. And what we've done in the second one, the top one is the current one from the 2015 plan. The bottom one is the proposed one. And Tom, if you would please bring up the second spreadsheet. We did this one first and then realized we could improve on that one and would like to do so. And so I'll go through the changes in this one. What we have done is added the column that says available in SMFP, and that's where the prior year bed need determination beds would be entered. And the yellow row there says 2014 bed need determination, I think. And that's the row it would be entered on, and it would apply to the planning area. It wouldn't be applied to a specific LME MCO. So we would need to add that column for the total, for adults, and for children and adolescents. The last column there says detox-only beds. That is simply an inventory of detox beds. They are not in the plan. Certificates of need are not required for detox-only beds. And the existing table has three extraneous columns that really are not needed and have not been needed for several years, and we are proposing to just eliminate those columns.
Could you expand on that a little bit, please?
Yes, I can. The current table, Tom, if you could bring it back, that would be helpful, I think. The one you just moved away. It has a column for CON, not yet licensed, and beds under review. And since the law was passed in 2003, taking detox-only beds out of the CON process, there have not been new CONs for those beds. The last certificate of need under the old law was resolved in 2009, but those columns have just stayed in the table and have had zeros in them since, I believe, the 2010 plan. They're just not there anymore.
I'm all for spring cleaning. Okay, is that the end of
that, the chapter? That concludes the presentation of the methodology and policies. There were no petitions.
Revised tables.
Revised
all
tables.
Chapter 16.
And, yes.
So, Mr. DiBiase, I know you caught every bit of that.
Yes, sir.
So, I'm seeking a motion from you for approval. Yes. Of the methodology, chapter narratives, changing table 16A. So moved by Mr. DiBiase. Thank
yes.
you. Second by Ms. Michaud. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, that carries as well. So, Dr. Craddock, chapter 17, please.
Chapter 17, intermediate care facilities for individuals with intellectual that and with individuals with intellectual disabilities. I'm sorry, I was getting tongue-tied there. There are several policies applicable to this chapter. The first is ICF IID-1, transfer of beds to state-operated developmental centers to community facilities for medically fragile children. Beds in state-operated developmental centers may be relocated to community facilities by the CON process to serve children age birth through six who have severe to profound developmental or intellectual disabilities and are medically fragile. This pertains to transfers of beds only, not patients. Once licensed in the community, the state-operated beds shall be closed. ICF IID-2, transfer of beds in state-operated developmental centers to community facilities for individuals who currently occupy the beds. Existing beds in state facilities may be transferred via the CON process to establish group homes in the community to serve people with complex behavioral challenges and/or medical conditions for whom such a community placement is appropriate. Once licensed in the community, the state-operated beds shall be closed. Applicants also must demonstrate their clinical experiences in serving the target population. To ensure that the beds will be used to serve these individuals, a written agreement is required among the LMEMCO where the group home is to be located, the director of the Division of State-Operated Facilities, the secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, and the operator of the group home. Policy ICF IID-3, transfer of beds to state-operated developmental centers to community facilities for adults with severe to profound developmental disabilities. The existing ICF IID beds in state facilities may be transferred to the community via the CON process to replace Community Alternatives Program for Individuals with Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, the CAP waiver slots lost as a result of the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services policy that is designed to prohibit the CAP waiver slots and ICF IID bed slots from being located on the same campus. This applies to the transfer of beds only, not patients, and once licensed in the community, the state-operated beds shall be closed. This applies only to facilities that have lost waiver slots as a result of the CMS policy. That concludes the policies for Chapter 17. The methodology in Chapter 17 is different from the others that we've just discussed. Beds are created in an ICF IID facility by issuance of a certificate of need to transfer beds from state-operated developmental centers. There is no specific calculation of bed need for these facilities as is done in most other chapters. That concludes Chapter 17, and there were no petitions for this chapter.
Thank you. So we do need a motion to approve the policies as outlined by Dr. Craddock. Seeking a motion, Ms. Michaud. Thank you. Mr. Bergen seconds. Any discussion or questions? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? that carries unanimously as well. So this is not on the agenda, but I think it's probably instructive since it's 11:16. Thank you to the staff for such an excellent meeting, for getting down to brass tacks and making this happen. So what I'd like then is maybe Drexel and or Shelley to kind of outline what's going to happen now so that the newer members have a little bit of an idea. Kind of tee us up, if you would, for you know what's going to go on between now and the May 1st meeting in terms of staff.
Certainly.
What they're going to be doing so that we're, and then what we're going to be doing May 1st. I think there are enough new members that probably be good to have a brief overview of that.
Okay. Our big crunch now, we got through the policies and methodologies, and now staff is allowed to move forward and work on the actual data. And we are working on the proposed plan, so we are going to be creating the tables to see what the need determinations look like. And pretty much that's what we're going to be working on until our next meeting. And we will come forth with the need determinations, which then inspire positions, which will come forth through public hearings in July. So you're going to be seeing the proposed plan by July, and then lots of things will happen with petitions and public hearings, and that will result in the final plan. Is that good enough?
That was outstanding. She wasn't probably close, so we stole her microphone. Bottom line is, everything that we approved today now gets get some legs and get some data, and May 1st we will meet to review what staff has come up with and then tee up the summer public hearings and petitioning process. So it will be very important. So next meeting of this group, Friday, May 1st in this room, 10 a.m. I'll also remind everybody that the next full SHIC meeting, Wednesday, June 3rd, 10 a.m., also here. So several of you are involved in our nursing home work group, and that will regroup here. I think we're going to gavel it down and get started at 12:30. I hope there's food on the way.
I hope so.
Paige also hopes there's food on the way. So anything else for the good of the order?
I would like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and make the members aware that the lunch today for that work group is actually being paid for by the chairman, and we appreciate his
private citizen Pulliam. private citizen Pulliam, who needs to eat.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Oh, that's my pleasure, my pure pleasure. Happy to do it. Happy to do it. So, again, great meeting, great work by the staff, great leadership. Great participation by the SHIC members. Chairman Ulrich, are you still awake?
I'm here.
Okay, anything else for the good of the order before we gavel this one closed?
I think you had a good meeting, and we'll continue to work through the yearly process. Thank you.
I seek a motion to adjourn the meeting, Ms. Michaud. Thank you. Second, Mr. Bergen.
Got it.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I can't imagine. We adjourn.
Bye. Thank you.
That was such a great work. Thank you. Knowledge. And it's a beautiful thing.
It was a beautiful thing.
It is.
Always gives you the willies when the chairman feels he needs to dial in.
Doc, you did a good job.
Trouble?
No, good job. I was bragging on you. I like to loop in the head. You did. Of course, they all made you look good.
So the public hearings, you have to be there for 2 hours. So you can't leave. These you can shut them.